Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. Because, you know, it's not what you're eating that's the problem. It's what's eating at you. And today I have a special guest, Mona Dan, who's going to tell us how acupuncture can be a really effective way to reach your health and wellness goals. And before I introduce Mona, I want to read you one of the testimonials from her website. And this is from one of her patients who said, and this is the patient talking, she said, "I have been to medical doctors, nutritionists, and Chinese healers who placed me on various medications and extremely strict diets, none of which were conducive to long-term lifestyle changes. What I appreciate most about seeing Mona is her patient and realistic approach. She didn't promise a significant change overnight. That was refreshing and more validating than a doctor or healer who promises you a magic solution. Mona encourages me to live a balanced life without a rigid, overly cautious, and stressful regimen." I love that because it's all about balance, isn't it? So let me tell you a little bit about Mona. She is an acupuncturist, specializing in traditional Oriental medicine and using healing treatments and tools to help reignite inner vitality and vibrancy. By identifying the underlying imbalances, she helps her patients achieve ultimate health and well-being. She owns a successful acupuncture business in Beverly Hills and has treated thousands of patients, teaching them the importance of investing in their bodies through holistic means of practice, knowledge, and nutrition. And she just created a line of herbal teas and supplements called V Healing. Welcome, Mona.
Hi, good morning.
So I think a lot of people hear about Western medication, Eastern philosophy, and they don't, maybe they think they know what that means, but often they don't. Can you clear up what is Western versus Eastern philosophy?
Sure. So the Western approach is more like where you would typically go to a Western MD doctor. They diagnose you with diabetes or an endocrine system disorder or something even more like a thyroid disorder. And with the Eastern approach, we look at the body as a whole. So even we really care about what the diagnosis is, but ultimately what we look at is blood flow and energy flow, hydration, and the natural flows of the body. You can have three people walk in with a thyroid issue, and we'll have three different diagnoses on our end. And why that's important is because once we are able to understand what the actual underlying issue is, it'll normalize the problem or the diagnosis. So it sounds very out there, but in reality, if you're not hydrated, your thyroid issue is going to be a lot more exacerbated, right? If your blood's not flowing well, your thyroid issue is going to be a lot more exacerbated. And each person is different. So having a thyroid issue, yes, you have the thyroid issue, and so do the other three people that are in the office. But what we look at is how is it affecting you? And we never know, did the chicken come first or the egg, right? Did the hydration issue come first or the thyroid issue? And it doesn't matter. What matters is that it gets fixed.
Yeah, I love that, because so often the problem is seen as the problem as opposed to a symptom of the problem or even a solution in the case of people who maybe eat to resolve something psychological.
Oh, yeah.
They think eating's the problem. No, eating's the solution to the problem. The problem is what's going on inside.
Exactly. And that's a perfect way to differentiate the two also. Western philosophy looks at the problem, the diagnosis. We look at the symptoms, right? We don't care about the diagnosis. We look at the symptoms, and every day you come in, your symptoms are going to be a little bit different, and we target those because we're moving with the change. We're not stuck to the diagnosis.
So one of my favorite analogies or metaphors whatever, whichever yeah. is the weed and the root. So yeah. a lot of times people look at the weed and they're like, oh my God, I've got to get rid of this weed.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you don't get to that root, of course, it's just going to keep popping up.
Exactly.
So from my perspective of the mind and your perspective of the mind-body connection,
oh yeah,
that really, we're aligned from just different perspectives.
Yeah, and it's ultimately the same, right? Because the mind creates a lot of change in the body, both positive and negative, because your mind sends signals down your spinal cord, down to your nerves, the nerves go to the organs, and then the organs have bundles of nerves that connect to the rest of the body and send signals. And then vice versa, it goes, that same relationship goes all the way back to the brain. So if we shift that conversation from the psycho-emotional aspect, it has a huge impact on overall wellness because our bodies are relaxed.
Absolutely. And although it sounds so trite, there is a mind-body connection. You cannot separate the two.
No.
So in terms of weight loss specifically,
sure.
what are the things that you see most commonly with your patients? And how, I know you said that everyone's an individual, but maybe as with my practice, the same thing, but there are themes. You know, there are often themes that you see in many, many different people. Is that true with you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's either we get a lot of young girls that come in with anxiety and weight loss. That's huge. Like, that's really big. We have a lot of men that are trying to lose weight. And again, there are psycho-emotional issues with that, like anger and, you know, so we deal with all of that all together. And then we have, like, the people coming in for the typical, I'm bloated, I feel this, I feel that, you know, or like, after pregnancy, women that come in, it just, it affects everyone in different ways, right?
So let's, and if anyone is listening that wants to talk to Mona about any of this, then the call-in number is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. If you have any questions about acupuncture and weight loss, Eastern philosophy when it comes to, you know, healing the body and soul, please feel free to give us a call.
Yeah. And also, like, even my business is called V Healing, but the word healing sometimes deters people in a way where they're like, what's healing? You know, what's that? They just want, like, the quick fix. But the truth of the matter is, what healing does is it relaxes the nervous system. And when the nervous system is relaxed, we shift from fight-flight mode into processing mode. So all those issues that you have even emotionally, start processing. To physically, what you're eating, but literally the food starts processing. Instead of it going in overdrive in the body, because your body's more worried about protecting you than digesting what's internal, right? So we want to shift the body from fight-flight to processing, and that's what happens.
To be able to think. Because a lot of people say to me, I just go in that binge zone, you know, I just start eating chips or cookies or cake or whatever it is, and I just can't stop. I'm in the zone.
Yeah.
And they say, like, I want to stop and I can't. So something has taken over. They are forcing their bodies to kind of be in a numb, I don't want to say relaxed, but just some...
like apathetic, aloof state.
Yeah, they're disconnected from themselves.
Yeah.
And often these food binges just have the effect of just... the zone is also like a big exhale, like...
Yeah, that's true.
And so what you're saying is that with your way of treating people, that instead of using binging and food to relax your body, use herbs or acupuncture or something like that, meditation, something.
Yeah, yeah. Let me explain to you how acupuncture works so that it's not just the word acupuncture here. So
yes, please do, because I'm like, okay, so tell us how putting needles in your body affects you. How is that good?
How can that make you happy? So me personally, I'm also terrified of needles myself, which is really funny.
That is hysterical.
But with acupuncture, we're using hair thin needles that are super fine. So upon insertion, most of the time you don't even feel it going in. There are certain areas like your hands and feet that can be a little sensitive because they're bony, but even those areas it's not excruciating in any way. It's not even like getting your blood drawn. It's very different. The needles are not hollow. It's just thin hair, hair thin needles. So the way it works is anytime a foreign object invades the body, your nervous system wakes up to attack this foreign object. That process of your nervous system waking up is literally like using a muscle you haven't used for a while, like going to the gym, and all of a sudden your arms are wiggly, then you go to the gym and you start feeling that pain. That's what happens to the nervous system. So we want to wake up the nervous system, and we do that by pretty inserting a foreign object into the body. So we do that, and then all the cells start responding, chemicals start releasing, endorphins start releasing to see what's going on, what is this thing. Both your parasympathetic nervous system, which calms you, and your sympathetic nervous system wake up to see what's going on. That process balances the two. Most of us are living in a more sympathetic response like lifestyle, which means fight flight. Like, we're late, we have to go, we have to stuff something in our mouth, we have to leave, we have to get there, we get there, we sit at our desks, we're starving, we can't get up. Oh, and then our body's telling us you have to go to the bathroom. We don't have time to go to the bathroom. We wait for an hour. So all these pieces of information that your body is trying to tell you get shut down, shut down, shut down. That process tells your parasympathetic nervous system that relaxes you to move away, because the sympathetic is in control, because we are fighting and flighting right now. So parasympathetic wakes up because it's gone to sleep. Sympathetic is on an overdrive right now, so it relaxes so it can work properly, because if it's on overdrive, it's not working properly either. And they start sending the proper signals and blood flow and cells, T cells, white blood cells, red blood cells, everything kind of goes throughout the body and starts scanning the body to see what's going on. This natural process also wakes up the organs. So you start digesting food better, your adrenals get energy, your lungs get more blood flow, so you can breathe better, you can relax better, you can take that deep breath in, and your mind starts relaxing. And this is literal physical responses that happen right upon the first needle of someone laying on the bed. For some people, they get more energy with the treatment because they're kind of just like, And other people that are go, 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 they relax.
That's me. I feel like almost lethargic afterwards. I come in because I'm way over-caffeinated because I live in that world of go, go, go.
Yeah.
And afterwards, it's like, oh, I feel like I'm on vacation and I had to get up early to catch the plane back home. No, let me stay.
Yeah, let me stay.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's all about relaxing the body, and that process helps everything.
And that process helps you relax your mind.
Exactly. And it's a lifestyle. You know, acupuncture, including that in your daily life, is like going to the gym. It's a workout for your nervous system.
How often do you suggest people get acupuncture?
So once a week is ideal. If there's a big issue at hand, like, I don't know, something regarding pain that you can't like move your neck, or something like a big diagnosis, like a thyroid disorder or a diabetes disorder, anything, 2 to 3 times a week, just to get the body in check. And after, I see the best results with people that just commit to it once a week, because it's a little tune-up for their body, and we all need that. There's no doubt.
And it's not long, right?
No.
Long are the treatments?
So you come in, and the needles typically stay in about 30 minutes, and you're out of there.
Yeah.
We can keep them in longer if you have more time and there's more we want to do with you, but for people who come in regularly, it's pretty short.
We were talking beforehand, if we get back to weight loss, which is, of course, a big interest to a lot of our listeners today. And you were telling me that you are a real fan of the blood type diet, even though which is really not a diet.
No.
It's more like
it's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle, but it's not about. I'll let you say why you like it.
I'm also very against diets. I'm against paleo and veganism and this and that, and I don't know, the keto diet,
ketogenic,
and this and this. Yeah. All of these will make your body feel incredible the first 3 or 4 months, but after 3 or 4 months, that's when you start seeing the flare up of disease, because not one type of diet is good for everyone, and that's a fact, because we are all different. Every single person's body is different, and the way we function is different, and the way we work is different, and you know, like, it's just, we're very different, so we can't all benefit from one blanket diet. And anyways, diets don't ever really last.
Exactly.
So what I typically put all my patients on is the blood type diet. And unfortunately, it's called a diet, but it's pretty much gives you a list of foods that are more harmful to your body, which means we, within each blood type, and there are people who don't believe in this diet and they don't believe in, but I've had incredible firsthand experiences with hundreds of patients with it, and I've been on it myself for the past 7-8 years. So we have certain enzymes in our body, and within the blood types, some people don't have those enzymes. So for example, I have a B blood type, and chicken releases this protein called lectin, and my body doesn't have the right enzymes to break down lectin. And what happens is I eat the chicken, and it, like, who wouldn't eat chicken? What diet, again, like instead of like being vegetarian or vegan, like what diet says don't have chicken, right? So when I eat the chicken, I pretty much try to digest it over a long period of time, and it just won't digest. And that process of my body trying to break this lectin down in my body puts my body in overdrive. And that overdrive takes priority over true digestion and mind relief. And because it's like, what is this foreign object? We have to attack it. So our body goes into stress mode. And then,
interesting.
Then we start acting like maniacs, right? And we're like, wow, I don't feel good. I don't feel this. I don't feel that. And you wouldn't think that it's the chicken that's causing this. So for like my blood type B, there are things like tomatoes and chicken, sesame seeds, chickpeas, and lentils. Those are like on my don't eat list, which for me, I've worked my life around it, and it's fine. I have turkey all the time. I have white beans, black beans, pinto beans. And then you have a whole list of neutral foods. It's massive. And then you have a list of beneficial foods. So I just try to incorporate that as much as I can.
Okay, so my blood type is A positive.
Okay.
Because I'm an overachiever.
Yeah.
So like for anyone out there who has A positive blood, what are the things that are not good
for
us?
So A blood types, they're more prone to the vegetarian diet. So even though they say avoid meat, I think everyone should have a little, like literally when I say a little bit of meat is like 3 bites of like a steak, especially for women, to give you that vitality, you know? But naturally the A blood diet like thrives on vegetables and fruits and grains, and that's like, that's what's really good for them.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's what I naturally kind of gravitate towards.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Like, even though like I love chicken, I'm totally fine without it. You know what I mean?
Right. You're not feeling like the chicken deprivation because you have so much else. And, you know, deprivation leads not necessarily with chicken, more with things like with
carbs
involving
sugar.
You know, if I can't have it, I better have it now because somehow I'm going to bank all of this because I can't get it later. Or eventually you just, when you go without, you're going to have the thing that you wouldn't let yourself have.
Exactly. And, you know, just to make it more like real, how incredible this diet is. I have a baby at home, and I've kept him on the blood type diet, and he has like AB blood type, and he's not supposed to have chicken either. And every time, because I wanted to try it, I wanted to see how he felt. Every time I gave him the chicken, he'd get a butt rash.
Interesting.
And those are the only times, because the body's on overdrive.
Oh, wow.
Literally, it's heating up the body. So we want the body to be at normal temperatures, and that heat releases as a rash, you know, literally. So, I mean, I've seen it firsthand on many accounts, but once I had my baby, I'm like, okay, nobody can tell me otherwise.
Right.
And I've done it multiple times, so it's not just like a one-time.
He's like your little lab rat, right there.
Yeah, my poor baby.
I mean, I shouldn't be calling your child a lab rat, but you know what I mean.
No. Yeah. It's incredible just seeing the results and seeing how you feel. And it, when you start this type of lifestyle with the blood type, it takes like 3 months for your body to kind of remove what's been in. So you have to stick to it for 3 months to really feel the difference. And then you do.
Please tell me that coffee is on the blood
type. No, it's
totally
fine. Coffee's fine. My only issue with coffee is people use it to wake up in the morning. And we spoke about that. And using anything to wake up in the morning means it's damaging your body. That means your body is already damaged and you're doing it for that. But there's always a reversal. So I'm all about the coffee also. It's my favorite part of the day.
Yes.
Grabbing that
but
coffee.
First coffee. Yeah. So you're saying exactly. But first coffee is not a good philosophy.
No. It's not but first coffee. Okay. It's literally but first tea. Mm. So if you need anything in the morning that has a little bit of caffeine, tea or matcha is the best choice. Because first of all, they're filled with antioxidants and a lot of good minerals that actually hydrate the body. And those minerals and that hydrate the body relax the adrenals, which is the complete opposite of coffee. So in the morning when you wake up, it's like your adrenals are like a car that are jump started, right? Your car's ready to go. And then all of a sudden, you pour coffee in your body. And that's like adding a tow truck to your car. But why? Like, why do you need that, right? It's like your car already gets shifted to neutral, right? The tow truck is doing its job. So your adrenals are like, all right, you don't need me.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Then, like, you get to your destination, it's lunchtime, and people usually skip lunchtime, or they're eating at their desk, or they're not, like, relaxed while they're eating. So that puts the body in a little bit of a shock mode, and you already don't have your adrenals to support it because you've kind of told them to kind of go to sleep when they woke up. And then the tow truck leaves you, and it's you and your body, and you have like the midday crash because your car is not moving anymore because it's on neutral.
Which is when people also turn to sugar.
Oh, yeah. That's so true. So how to reverse that is have the coffee after your meal. And you get your nice little kick for the day, and it's a healthy kick because your body's nourished. It's not relying on your adrenals to give you the energy from the coffee. It helps digest your food faster, and it takes energy from the food you've already eaten. And then you don't have that midday crash, and then you feel so much better, and it's not too late in the day where you can't sleep at night having coffee. So
you're saying have coffee, like, after
coffee.
Lunch.
Yeah. And that also, like, even if you have coffee with a little dark chocolate after lunch, it's so good for you. It's amazing, filled with antioxidants. It's something to look forward to also during the day, which brings a little bit of positivity to the day.
And if you're being told, hey, eat that chocolate, then you can eat it without guilt.
Exactly.
And then you don't overeat it.
Yeah. My favorite afternoon snack after I have, like, my lunch is I grab a banana. I have, like, a lighter lunch. I don't have such a big lunch. But I have a banana with nut butter, mixed nut butter, and my coffee. And that's, like, heaven for me. I don't know.
You're making me hungry.
That's why.
You were also saying, like, at least here in America, and I know that there are people listening from other countries, but here in America, the go-to breakfast is, like, cereal and milk.
Oh, yeah. Or juices and shakes.
Juices and shakes.
So those also are kind of damaging to the body because they're cold. Because your body's waking up, it's looking for warmth in the morning, and we're spilling ice cold or raw juices or milk and cereal or whatever, like a big shake, and it just
sits
in our body, and it's like bleh. And it's all sugar based because we've removed all the fiber essentially. So I'm not a big fan of shakes and smoothies, and, you know, like, it's like just have an apple. You don't need to have
fake
five
foods.
You don't need to have five different vegetables or fruits in a shake. Have an apple. Like, you'll go so much further with that. I like them. They taste good. But when I have them, I literally have a small, tiny cup of it because our bodies are able to digest that, right? A little bit of it, our body's able to digest. But a whole big, like, huge 16-ounce cup of it is torture for our body.
And probably has the same amount of calories as a milkshake.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And you don't feel good. Like, essentially, you might feel good the first couple weeks you start doing this. But down the line, your blood sugar is going to drop. You're just not going to feel good after it.
Yeah. One of the really popular diets that more and more people are coming to me and asking me about, which, I don't know, the idea of putting butter in one's coffee.
Oh, yeah, just like the bulletproof.
The
stuff.
Bulletproof or the ketogenic.
Yeah. So butter is fat soluble, right? It's all fat. What happens is the caffeine fits itself inside fat cells, and then you drink that, so you have a slow release of caffeine as the butter is releasing, right? So
digesting.
So as the butter starts digesting, you start getting little releases of caffeine, so it elongates that caffeination sensation.
Okay, right? So that's why people...
But why is that not good? Is because when you start having coffee from early in the morning, your body starts releasing cortisol. Mm. And what cortisol does is it... What it does, it puts your body in fight-flight mode because it thinks you're drinking caffeine because you need to go attack something. So cortisol comes to assist. When cortisol comes to assist, the first thing it holds on to is fat.
Especially around your middle.
Around the belly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because why the middle? Because all your important organs are there and we need to protect our organs.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So when cortisol gets released over a long extended period of time during the day, you're more prone to disease. Cancer, autoimmune disease, thyroid issues, endocrine issues, diabetes, right? So we want to kind of eliminate that release as much as we can, and we do that by nourishing the adrenals.
And let's face it, it can't be good to be eating spoonfuls of butter in your coffee. I mean, that cannot be good for your cardiovascular.
They do butter, they do coconut, like coconut fat of some sort, oil. I don't know.
And as you said, it's just these are unsustainable.
Unsustainable. Yeah.
Never. What's the saying? Never trust a four-letter word where the first three letters spell die.
Yeah. Right.
Diet. No diets. If anyone has any questions for Mona about diets, about acupuncture, about oriental medicine, our number is 818-602-4929. So what do you think the biggest mistake is that most people make when they're trying to lose weight, besides eating cold things in the morning or shakes?
Starving themselves. It's huge because, again, that does releases the whole cortisol aspect. And, yes, you will lose weight the first month because you're in starvation mode. But after disease starts kicking in, your body's going to start holding on to anything and everything your body does have at that point. So eating is good for you, right?
Right.
Having a balanced meal. Another thing that's really important is giving your body a schedule. When your body can depend on a schedule, it trusts you. And it's literally as simple as that. Like, our bodies are so intelligent. They respond to the weather around us. They respond to the environment around us. And when we give our body a schedule, it starts relaxing. It's just like a little child. When you give your child a schedule, when you have boundaries, the child feels safe. So does our body. But when we're kind of just like, okay, today I wake up at 10, but I'm not hungry. Oh, we have to make plans for brunch. Oh, it's too late. Now it's 2:00. I haven't eaten yet, but I'm starving. I'm just going to eat anything. Your body's just like, you know what? Forget you.
Right.
Yeah.
Or hold on to whatever your metabolism slows.
Oh,
let's hold on to that food because who knows when we're going to get it next.
Yeah. And it's like that. It's truly like that. And there's studies on it and it's been proven. And I don't know.
Yeah, for the book that I'm working on currently, I did a lot of research on how actually dieting, but the premise is, you know, don't diet, here's what to do instead.
Yeah.
But I had to then first make the case of why should you not diet?
Yeah.
And I found study after study after study that shows dieting actually makes you gain weight in the long term.
Yeah.
Many, many studies from in decades of studies, actually, that show that people who diet... in the long run, they will gain weight versus non-dieting.
And a lot of men and women who do yo-yo dieting have a lot of issues with fertility in the long run.
Interesting.
Which is really interesting. Because the body is just kind of shot, right? And it doesn't know what to do. And it kind of freaks out. And our like procreating organs are very sensitive to the different temperatures that it gets introduced to. So when someone freezes, it's like... they eat a lot of cold and raw and salad, literally cold like takes over that area because it's freezing. Like, you're drinking that and it's going through those organs. And what baby wants to live in that type of environment?
Hmm.
Right? So with fertility, we warm up the body.
Hmm.
We change the diet. We literally do this thing called moxa where we burn, it's like sage, mugwort, and not sage, mugwort, with ginger over the belly button to have heat kind of go into the midsection, and you see crazy results with fertility. But we have a diet change for them, It's just everything goes hand in hand at the end of the day. And also, food, this is really important. Food builds blood. And in our blood, we have, that's where we hold our energy, and it's also where we hold our emotions. That's what we believe in Chinese medicine. Which is really interesting, especially considering like women and PMS, when they're releasing blood, their emotions are all over the place. And it's
that is for sure. My husband can attest to that.
Yeah. So there's a huge correlation between emotions and blood, but also food builds blood. When food breaks down, we build blood with it. So we want to have nourished and nutrient-dense blood flow because that's what relaxes our metabolism and our adrenals and our nervous system and our brain and everything.
So food is medicine, really.
It really is. It really is. And I have the tea line and the supplement line. And you hear a lot of words like adaptogens these days.
Mm-hmm.
And what adaptogens do is they pretty much fortify the blood. And they shift your nervous system from that stress mode to the processing mode, and they build nutrient-dense blood, right? Another plug I want to say for adaptogens, which is important, is some people will just take like ashwagandha because they heard ashwagandha is good, or they take like licorice root. It doesn't work that way. They need to come in a formulation because they're like powerhouses. If you just take ashwagandha, it kind of gets lost in your body because there's so many different elements roaming around.
So you really need someone who can help you
formulate
it and have the right formulation for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And as you said, you just have this new line of supplements and teas so that, you know, for people who are listening who can't get to Beverly Hills to actually see you, you can get to them in some way.
Yeah, we have an online store. And the first, I didn't want to overwhelm people because when you're overwhelmed, you don't make the right decisions. So we came out with three lines. So one is a calming line, and that's more for like the people who they can't rest their heart and their mind, right? So those adaptogens nourish the blood to relax the heart and mind. Then we have a detox line. This is my favorite line because the way we look at detox is very different than how society looks at detox. What we do for detox is we build the body, we build the blood, we provide energy, nutrient density. And instead of stripping the body, removing this, remove it, it's opposite of that. When you build the blood properly, it naturally eliminates quicker, faster, and more effective, right? You have more natural and healthier cellular waste removal.
Which just, if I may interject, I mean, all of this notion of cleansing and cleanses and these detoxes, and I've always been like, you know, our bodies have a natural cleansing mechanism.
Yeah.
Like just very, let it do it.
A very natural cleansing
right.
system. Right. Colonics ruin my life when patients come in because I see it. They come in and they're like, okay, I'm going to go get a colonic. And I never say no to anyone. Because that's, I don't believe in that. Like, some people, they have to go through it to experience it. I give my opinion. Like, well, generally, you can feel really deficient after. Generally, first of all, you're sticking something in a direction that it should not be going. Especially when you don't need it. You're just doing it voluntarily. If you need it for, like, some sort of, like, surgery or some, like colonoscopy or something that, you know, that's fine. But you're sticking something in the opposite direction where it should not be going. And then you're forcing water pressure where it should not be going. And obviously, you get a rush of release of nutrients, both good and bad. Mm. And the good ones are the worst ones because those are the hardest ones to replenish. And then they come in and they have all sorts of issues. Fatigue, tiredness, lethargy. They don't feel good. They can't digest their food. They have problems going to the bathroom. And I'm just like, wow. How do these places survive, these like colonic places?
Yeah, well, they're good at sales because they have all of those catchy phrases.
Yeah. Detox, eliminate.
So you were saying you have the one for people who are,
and then the detox. So that's the detox, to build the body so that it naturally detoxifies you. And then the last one is the happy line. So that's for like the stress balls, and it's different than the calm line because stress balls more are like people associate more emotional responses to the environment. So anger, issues coping with stress, managing stress. And what that does is those adaptogens work on the liver and the spleen. So it really focuses on digesting food well and to nourish the liver, because our liver control a lot of our emotions because it builds blood. And remember, emotions and blood.
Right, emotions and blood.
So, yeah. So those are the three, and people really love it. And
So given the importance of the liver, what is your stance on, say, wine?
Fine. It's totally fine. The only issue with wine is if you're... So wine invigorates blood. It moves blood. That's why we feel good with it. But then you have some people who really don't feel good with it. And those are the people that don't have good blood flow, or they're deficient in blood. Blood deficiency is different than anemia. It just means the oomph of the blood isn't there in the body. So it's not flowing well. Right? So those are the people who get really weak. They need to sleep. They don't feel good. It's just too much for their body. But if someone has like a healthy like blood flow and they, you know, and they drink wine, great, go for it. It's good. As long as you don't abuse it, obviously.
Of course. I only abuse coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, earlier you mentioned those people who come in and they say, oh, I'm so bloated. I hear this all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so bloated. I don't know why I'm so bloated. I wasn't bad yesterday, so why did I wake up this way? Mm-hmm. Which is a whole other conversation, which is that you're not bad if you eat something you think you shouldn't have eaten.
Yeah, it doesn't identify your goodness or badness.
Exactly. But so for people who are like, oh, the bloat, what commonly is the cause of bloat?
So bloat in Chinese medicine has to do with the deficiency of energy. So if you're not nourished, your energy's not nourished. So either like the food choices you made previously, so eating more heartier foods, healthier foods, but not healthier, but like a more like something that can like build your blood, something that could give you energy, or people who starve themselves feel this a lot, or people who are too stressed feel this a lot because their body's not in processing mode. It's in, right? So there's a lot of different factors. And then for women, depending on where they are in their cycle, the bloat is there, and it can be for some people before their cycle, for some people in the middle of their cycle, and for some people after their cycle.
Or all three.
So, that's true. And that all three gives you information. Because if you have issues before your cycle, that means there's a deficiency. If you have it during it, that means you have a stagnation issue, so inflammation in the body. And then if it's after, then it's like there's an excess issue that is now deficient, so it's just your body's just like, bleh.
So instead of saying, oh, I'm so bloated, and because the next sentence is usually, I feel so fat. Mm-hmm. Fat is not a feeling. Yeah. It is a substance. But I digress. So if you're going like, oh, I'm so bloated, I feel so fat, ugh.
Yeah.
So the hell with it, I'm gonna have whatever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna eat that bad thing because I already feel bloated already.
Yeah.
So maybe think of it as, okay, this bloat is information.
It's all information.
It means something is askew in my body, not that I, have eaten too much, or that I am fat, or that I have done something wrong,
right,
or I have no control. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I have no control. I did everything right, and yet I'm still bloated. Mm-hmm. To look at it as something, an information about what's going on in your system.
Exactly. And it's all information. And you know, with information, you can get answers because you can ask the right questions if you look at it that way.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. And I will invite our listeners to ask questions of you, Mona.
Sure.
818-602-4929 is the number. If you have any questions, Mona is here to answer them.
Yes.
So tell us how you came to be an acupuncturist.
So I was pre-med, and there was just this huge disconnect with everything I was learning. And I come from a family of a lot of doctors, and there's always this disconnect. But I really wanted to be in the position of helping people and understanding the physiology of the body and pathophysiology. And I just was really drawn to it, and I loved it. Randomly, go ahead.
Hold that thought, because we have a caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina and Mona. Who's this?
Hi, Dr. Nina and Mona. This is Larry. How are you?
Hi, Larry from Burbank.
From Burbank, that's correct.
I recognize your voice. How are you?
Good, good, good. Just giving a shout out to the wonders of acupuncture. I'm a needle phobe, and I had acupuncture, and there's no fear if anyone's worried about needles and acupuncture. If I can take it and enjoy it, there's no fear at all for folks who fear needles. And I found that having the acupuncturist work on my forehead, he calls that, I think, the heavenly meridian or something like that, that it really was very relaxing for anxiety, so it really works.
Yeah. The heavenly meridian. How awesome is that?
I think that's what the term he used. Maybe he's being poetic or something, but, you know, it worked. It just kind of puts me out, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, it does. It's like the Xanax of points. It's the third eye point. That's the one you're talking about?
Yeah, he puts that right between the eyebrows, a little bit above, slightly, and then he adds more on either side.
Yeah.
But I go in feeling anxious, and I leave walking like melted butter.
It's true. And, you know, there is a whole esoteric aspect of acupuncture, and the reason why they did use these kind of names for the points is to connect to the points. And like one is like the water passage of the river, or like, you know, and that's because 2,000 years ago, this is how they were able to connect with hydration.
Mm.
You know, like they didn't know
very
dehydration.
Evocative.
They're just like, oh, you know, so, and they were naturally more poetic and esoteric, and they had more of a relationship with the external world and more esoteric world. I typically don't take that stance, the esoteric stance, which I'm not saying doesn't exist, because it definitely does. I had a crazy experience myself when I was in school with it. But for me, it's more about like the more physical understanding, explaining, really having the people understand what I'm doing to them.
So, Larry, would you say that when you get this treatment, that somehow you connect to yourself in a different way? Or do you feel more connected to your body?
I would say, well, it's low-grade morphine. I don't know about connection. But the minute he puts those in, gives it a nice twist, and turns on the music, it just physically, there's no thinking behind it. I just really start to relax, and it feels, I can feel the needles in me, but it feels nice, kind of like a, almost like a micro-massage in that spot.
Yeah, and it is. It's more internal than a massage, so.
And what's interesting is you've called before, and you've talked about your sort of internal harsh voice. And what I'm hearing is an absence of that harsh voice, that somehow acupuncture treatment allows you to just be and to feel relaxed without thinking these mean thoughts that you've shared that you think towards you, that you're battling at other times.
Yeah, I mean, if I can call that a, quote, voice, not in a psychotic sense, but the internal dialogue, it's not eliminated, but the volume is turned down to one. And the only thing that I can relate to, and this helps even more, is deep tissue massage. It's kind of like that in the same way, and to a much lesser extent, exercise, where I'm really hurting in a good way, but it's a distraction. It's a vacation from my thinking is what it is.
How often do you go for acupuncture?
Do I what?
How often do you get acupuncture?
You know, I don't anymore. I used to go in Orange County. Actually, a friend of mine is the acupuncturist, and I'm really considering re-upping that and doing it again.
Do it.
Do it.
Go for it.
Yeah. I hear you.
Burbank is not that far from Beverly Hills.
No.
I know. Well, I found that self-administering safety pins just causes infection. So,
that's true. And we're also opening in West Hollywood in the next
month. Okay. It really isn't. So
yeah.
I may be going over there to the Wright Institute sooner than later, and that's in the same general hood. I know Dr. Nina knows that.
Yeah. Oh, and this is important. Insurance does accept acupuncture, and more than 80% of our practice is insurance-based. So that's the good news.
That is very good to know.
And we also, for proper situations, also prescribe massage that we do in-house also. We have massage therapists, kind of to reignite the bodies. vitality, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if you shared your website, but I'll look you up and go from there.
Thank you.
The website will be on the LA Talk Radio archives after the show.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Or you can always email me, and I'll give you her information, and that goes for anyone out there.
Yeah, but it's vhealing.com.
Yeah, V-I-E.
V-I-E-healing.com.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you much.
Thanks for sharing your experience, Larry.
Yeah, it's great. No fear of needles to worry about, and highly recommend it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
We have another caller. Hello, Nick.
Hi.
You're on with Dr. Nina and Mona Dan. How are you?
Hi. Good. Very good. I've been listening to the show, and I know you asked how long between visits and so on, but like Larry, I was listening to Larry, and he was talking how wonderful it was, the nice experience he had. But how long, really, does that feeling last?
That's a good question.
That he had when he went to his last experience with acupuncture.
So typically, for someone that's a newbie and they come in, the feelings should pretty much fade after 3 days, and that's because the body tries to. Yes,
you're not coming in real good here.
Oh, okay. So for newbies, typically the first session lasts about 3 days, and that's because the body wants to go back to its original ways. But if you continue treatment and continue to come in, you'll see that those feelings last longer and longer and longer. And then typically between treatments, you shouldn't have so much of a flare-up, I want to say.
It's very much like therapy. Right?
At first, you have
to come frequently to sort of sustain it and carry it with you, and eventually can go longer.
It builds on itself in the body. I like to consider it like a snowball. Mm-hmm. So you build a little snowball. Go ahead.
So if I or a person walked in there, we'd sit down and have that therapy session explaining what was bothering me, and so that the... you would understand where the best place you would use the acupuncture to fight the problem that I had.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. So the first session is a mix of a consultation and actual treatment. So we get to see what's really going on. I take a look at your tongue, and I take your pulse. And the reason why I look at the tongue is I get to see, it's first of all, it's the only external organ we have in our bodies. So we can see the state of all the internal organs just by the look of our tongue. So if the tongue is dry, we know the body's running dehydrated. If the tongue is too wet, then we know you're having problems digesting water and water metabolism. If the tongue is too puffy and quivery, then there's internal fatigue. If the tongue is rigid and straight and narrow, then there's an excessive situation. So we're able to see, if the tongue is pale, we see that blood doesn't have good energy. If the tongue is too red, then we know there is too much heat in the body. So the tongue gives us a lot of information, and it's one of our biggest tools of understanding what's going on internally. So after I listen to the symptoms that you're dealing with, and I take a look at your tongue and your pulse, I decide where to do the needles. And after the needles are in, you lay for about 20 to 30 minutes, and just really relax and let your body take over.
Boy, I don't know about you, Nick, but I right after the show, I'm going to go stick my tongue out in a mirror and look at it.
Yes.
I'm so curious right now.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got one quick weird question, maybe. Do you ever deal with two parts of the body at the same time?
Yes.
Okay, so you got a bad back who goes here, and you got anxiety, ease on the head, you can do two places at once.
Everything is related. And just because you have a bad back, it doesn't mean I'm going to needle the back, which is really interesting.
Oh, okay.
So we use polar points on the body, opposite points on the body, to treat the areas that are affected. So you can come in with a handful of issues, and pretty much all of them get touched on because they're related. they're
right. Anxiety and back pain, you know, can be very much related.
Yeah.
It can symbolize feeling burdened by your anxieties.
Yeah.
So you can feel it.
And even if you've dealt with your back pain for like 10 years and then the anxiety is 2 years old, they still have a correlation with blood flow. Anxiety, pain is blood not flowing well, that's inflammation. And anxiety is blood not flowing, causing a sensation of stuckness. So it's all related to the blood. So we work and manage the blood there.
This is so fascinating. Nick, thank you so much for calling. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
I know.
So I'm going to let Mona tell us again where we can find her and reach her and order her supplements if that's something that you want to do. VHealing.com?
Yes. We have everything on the website. And if you have any questions, you can also email me. If there's a question of which one might work best for you or how to take them, yeah.
And they can email you through the website,
VHealing.com. The website. Yeah, there's a contact sheet and it goes directly to our email so it doesn't get lost in the web.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It was thank you
really
for having
interesting
me.
Perspective. For everyone out there, please join me next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio for the next episode of The Dr. Nina Show. Bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.